Liz, good morning.
Good morning, Nathaniel.
So Liz, what kind of trends are leading to this renewed interest in sustainable practices in art and the so-called slow textile movement?
I think there's a number of trends. A lot of people are interested in and concerned about environmental issues and using materials sourced from the environment to dye cloth or paper or bandanas. Links their artwork to their concern. There's also a high interest in making by hand and hand dyeing as well as hand stitching or hand printing reinforces that interest in handmade, and that's a slow textiles link. There's also a lot of concern about the damage done by the commercial dye industry with its fast fashion approach, and so this is again tied up with concern about the destruction to the environment through the dye industry, although that industry has been cleaned up a huge amount in the last little while. It lingers on. So there's just been this general interest in going back to things that are more handmade and constructed naturally.
Well, you yourself, you gave a seminar on Friday, giving an overview, rather, of what's been published in the last pretty much 200 plus years on Indigenous plants here in Australia. Now, are these books more about their medicinal and culinary properties or more about identification and dyeing potential?
It's the latter, really. I've not really looked at medicinal or culinary properties, but that's also another approach for Indigenous plants, another body of research that can be done for Indigenous plants. My interest is how people discovered the colours in Australian Indigenous plants. This is since European settlement here. And even at that time, Indigenous populations were using dyes and pigments to colour their baskets and bodies and body decorations. So aside from that, when Australia was settled, when Philip came here in 1788, it was really nearly it was 70 years before the first aniline dye was discovered. So for a long period of time, people looked at the local environment for dye potential in the plants or for cultivating imported plants that could give dyes. So that's what my research has been. So it's been interesting. A lot of it has been, books have been published about what colours the plants could give, and most of those really until the 1980s were, the colours were described only rather than shown, given an example of the dyes.
Right, that's quite interesting. With this process of harvesting the dyes, as you know, it involves growing, identifying, harvesting, etc. Given how it's pretty labour-intensive, this process, does that mean cloth-based works of art, they're not really affordable for most people?
I think it varies, and a lot of people within the Renaissance, a lot of people are just, you know, dying with plants quite easily. And from my point of view, I've been doing this, and I'm not very precise at doing it. So it depends on the goal. I think if you're not precise like I am, I'm still getting great colours. I'm not getting consistency of I'm getting consistency each time I get a colour, but it's not exact colour repeated, and that's the textile industry would want that. If they promote something that's red, they want the exact red the second time they make the garment. But I think for a lot of artists, we like this idea that there's this randomness built into plant dyeing. Given that some of the artists and social enterprise groups in the exhibition repeatedly use the same plants over and over again, so they get to know those. The social enterprise groups, they're made from India that are included in the exhibition. They have very rigorous testing for their products, and so they can tell you what quality of light fastness their designs are. So they have to do that because they're selling into the commercial market.
Just before, you mentioned how it's kind of varied the resulting colour you'll get from these naturally made process-intensive colours. How is it compared to, say, aniline dyes? Is it similar to work with, or is it a bit less useful to use?
So with aniline dyes, you would, with any chemical dye, you get it, there's a recipe, there's some chemicals that need to go into the dye pot along with the dye powder, and you have to follow that recipe. And in the industry, they would be testing for the light fastness of all of those dyes. So if a textile artist was using similar dyes, they may not do that testing, but the assumption is that dyes are going to be quite light fast and not fade in light or through use, through repeated washing. So with the natural dyes, I mean, they're going to continue. They'll last. They do have a reputation of fading, but if my comment is that aniline dyes really came into production, chemical dyes came into production after 1856. So everything produced up until that date, and even for 70, 80 years later, was made with natural dyes. So a lot of those pieces that we see in museums around the world, or even here in some of our museums, were dyed with natural dyes. And they, as far as we can, you know, we see vibrant colours when we look at them. So if the dyeing process is accurate and the right processes are followed, the colour will last.
Right, that's quite interesting. Well, that's all the time we've got for. Liz, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
My pleasure, and I encourage people to come to see the exhibition. It's on at UNSW Art and Design Galleries, which are on the corner of Oxford Street and Greens Road.
I've got a link I'll mention in just a moment. Liz,
thank you, Nathaniel.
Thank you. That was Associate Professor Liz Williamson from UNSW giving us some insights into the pretty exciting world of slow textiles.